Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Sukkah is daf Lamed. We began the third parak of Sukkah yesterday, so let's just quickly reiterate and review some of the basic points that we discussed yesterday and take it from there. We went through the Mishnah, we read the Mishnah, made some points in the Mishnah, but just quickly to review. The third parak of Sukkah deals with the mitzvah of Lulav, Hadassah, Maravos, and Esrog. The Dalaminim. The Dalaminim is all one mitzvah. As we'll learn over the course of this parak, the Ma'akev, meaning that I need all four species in order to the Mikayim, the mitzvah of Dalaminim on Sukkos. But the Mishnah, however, treats each one of these Minim independently in terms of teaching us each Min by itself. The Gemara later on will point out, because each one of the Minim have its own separate set of halachas. So we'll have a halacha specific to Lulav, we'll have a halacha specific to Hadas, Arava, and Esrog. So therefore, in the Mishnayos, they are treated independently, but vis-a-vis a mitzvah, it's all one unified mitzvah. If I collected three of them in them on Sukkot, that's good, but that doesn't fulfill the mitzvah. It's not good enough. The ma'akiv zedzeh, they hold each other back, so you need all dalaminim. Do they need to be bound up? That's the machlokas that we saw earlier in the Masechta. We're going to see it again today, as to whether or not the dalaminim need to be bound up or whether they could just simply be held together. Okay, that's coming up later on. In the meantime, however, we're talking about the lulav, and the Mishnah told us regarding the lulav that if I stole the lulav, or if it's dried up, so it's no good, it's pasul, it's disqualified. So we pointed out yesterday, just quickly to reiterate some of the points that we made yesterday. So if I have a stolen lulav, so it's no good, because we know that there's a lachem requirement. The Torah says, "Olkachtum lachem b'yom harishon," you're supposed to take for yourselves on the first day, and then the Gemara goes to the. Then the Torah goes to the dalaminim, pri etzadur kapus tamarim anaf etzavos arvei nachal. So the Torah says, "Olkachtum lachem," you have to take it, meaning it has to be in your possession. So if I steal it, it's not my possession; it's not mine; it's stolen. I have an obligation to return it, and so therefore, I haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. Yavesh, what about if it's dry? So if it's dry, I haven't fulfilled the mitzvah as well. Why not? What's wrong with the dry lulav? So here, as we pointed out yesterday, so there are two basic approaches. Actually, there's a third basic approach. But there are two basic approaches found in the daf. Rashi points out that the reason why if it's dry, it's no good is because it's a function of zekili vanveu. We know that we have to make our mitzvahs beautiful. The lulav has to be beautiful. And the fact that it's all dried up, so it's no longer beautiful. So that's Rashi says. That's why there's a requirement of it has to be moist, it has to be wet, because it's no longer is a function of zekili vanveil. It's no longer beautiful. According to Rashi, as we pointed out yesterday, it's a general concept. It's not specific to lulav. In other words, but there's a general concept that I have to beautify my mitzvahs. Tosfos, we went over this point yesterday, but just simply quickly to reiterate, Tosfos says that it can't be. Rashi can't be right. Zekili vanveil, yes, it's true, you have to beautify your mitzvahs, but that's a din lechatchila. That just brings your mitzvah from good to very good. That's not going to disqualify your mitzvah. Tosfos says, I can't imagine that the psul of our Mishnah, where Mishnah is talking about disqualification, that the psul of the Mishnah is going to be a function of Zekei Levan Veil. Hard to imagine. So Tosfos says it's not a function of Zekei Levan Veil, but rather, Tosfos says it's based on a Hekesh. In the Pasuk, there are four Minim that are mentioned in the Pasuk. One of the four Minim is pre-Eitz Hadar, that's the Esrog. But how does the Torah describe the Esrog? Pre-Eitz Hadar, it has to be beautiful. So Tosfos says, Hekesh, just like the Esrog has to be beautiful, the other Minim also have to be beautiful. The Lulav, Hadas, Arava will have to be beautiful. Not as a function of Zekili Vanveil, but simply as a function of pre-Eitz Hadar. They're all connected with one another. And that's the Din Le'ikuva. That tells us that once the Lulav is dry, so the Lulav is going to be disqualified, because it no longer defines itself as pre-Eitz Hadar. It's no longer Hadar. Okay, that's the second basic explanation. And as we pointed out yesterday, a third basic explanation that's given by the Ravid. I believe it's a Yerushalmi, but belief is not good in terms of learning. You got to know. Belief is good in terms of Kadosh Baruch Hu, but belief is not good in terms of learning. I'm pretty sure it's a Yerushalmi. But anyway, the Ravid quotes. The Ravid, for sure, that part's correct. So the Ravid says that the Yavesh is, why is Yavesh a problem? Why is Yavesh a disqualification? Because of the Pasuk in Tehillim. The Pasuk in Tehillim says, "Lo amesim yahaluka," that the dead cannot praise the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And when the lulav is dry, it's dead. It's kames. It's like a dead lulav. I understand. You cut it from the ground. It's right. But once it experiences yavshus, once it's dry, so it's no longer dead, and so it no longer is able to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the understanding of the Ravid. Okay. That is just a quick summary of what we did yesterday. I'm going to reread the Mishnah again. I'm not going to go into great depth in the Mishnah because the truth of the matter is the Gemara is going to cover pretty much every point in the Mishnah, but we're going to go through the Mishnah again quickly. Lulav agazal v'yavish pasol. The lulav which is stolen or dry is disqualified. Shal asher v'shal nidach is pasol. If the lulav was an asherah, meaning that the palm frond itself comes from a tree which was dedicated to Avodah Zarah, an asherah tree. Again, we'll talk more about that later on in this perek. Or if it's coming from an ir anidachas, a city which is the majority of the members of the city are Ovid Avodah Zarah, so it's a subversive city. So the city itself, the people themselves are judged, but the possessions in the city are all collected into the center of the city and are destroyed. The Mishnah says that if I get a lulav from such a city, it's not going to be a good lulav. I cannot use it to fulfill my mitzvah of lulav on Sukkos. We'll talk more about that in the Gemara later on. Niktam Rosho. If the head is chopped off, if the head of the lulav is chopped off. So if you look at Rashi kemat, step by step throughout the Mishnah says, why not? Hadar, hadar, hadar. Rashi continuously says that all these problems, not the asherah tree and not the ir anidachas, but in any type of physical problem with the lulav, it's dry, its head is chopped off. They're all problems of hadar. Now, just to be technical, which is what we do when we learn Gemara, just to be technical, when it says that the head is chopped off, what does that mean? The head exactly? So this is subject to a debate amongst the Rishonim. Take a look at the second Tosfos on the Amud. So he gives the description of what we mean when we say the head of the lulav. Yeah, the understanding, of course, is in other words, everyone here understands basic anatomy of a lulav. A lulav is a palm frond, but prior to its opening up, meaning when we think of the palm fronds, we think of them open up, but if you look at the top of the palm tree, so the palm frond itself is still closed, and the leaves are still connected to the lulav. So each leaf, basically, in other words, you go along the spine of the lulav, and you have leaves coming off on each side until you get to the top of the spine, where you have leaves coming off the very top. Most of the time you have just one single leaf coming off the top. Sometimes you have a double leaf coming off the top. Each leaf by itself can be further subdivided into two, meaning each leaf of the palm frond actually is basically a folded over leaf, where what you could do is you could split each leaf open. So when the Mishnah over here says Niktam Rosho, the head is cut off, so what head are we talking about? So if you take a look at the top, at the second to top Tosos on the Amud, let me just say it simply. The second Tosos on the Amud, L'chora Mayr B'Shnei Alem Ha'emtzayim Ha'yotzi Me'Rosh Ha'Shedra. So ostensibly says Tosos, we're talking about the top two. Top two meaning, ostensibly, meaning the middle one. We're going to see a term used later on in the Gemara, not today, but the term that is used later on is the Tiyomus. The Tiyomus is basically the twin. Tiyomus from the word Te'omim, the twin leaf, but even with the word Tiyomus, is that talking about the center twin leaf, or is it talking about all the leaves? Okay, we're going to, we could go on with this, but just for our purposes, Niktam Rosho, the head is chopped off. The head of the lulav is chopped off, the lulav is disqualified. And again, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says it's a function of hadar. It's no longer a beautiful lulav. Niktam Rosho, Nifritsu Alav. Now, Nifritsu Alav, Rashi explains, what does that mean? It means the leaves are torn off. Somebody tore off the leaves. So if there's somebody tore off the leaves, so how could it possibly be a good lulav? The leaves were tied back on. Rashi describes, like a broom, right? Rashi actually says that, like a broom, meaning that somebody tore off the leaves and put it back onto the spine and tied it back onto the spine.
Like, see,
that's the way Rashi describes it, of Nifritsu Olav. Okay, how many leaves are torn off? Again, third Tosfos, you could take a look. It's a discussion in terms of how many leaves we're talking about that got torn off. But anyway, Nifritsu Olav puzzle. Nifridu Olav Kasher. Now, let's say the leaves aren't torn off, but they're just kind of started spreading out. Meaning, the regular development of a palm frond is that as it starts to grow, it's nice and tight, the leaves are nice and tight right up against the spine, but as it develops and as it matures, the leaves start spreading. So let's say you plucked the frond off when the leaves started spreading. So the Mishnah says, that's not a psul. That's not a disqualification. Kasher, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Yigdeh, Amalamala, Rabbi Yehuda says, but you should tie it up on top. Sinai Har Barzel Ksheros, the lulav that is gotten from the Sinai Har Barzel, the mountains of Barzel, the Iron Mountains, or Kasher. The Gemara later on, we'll talk about it. We'll save that for the Gemara's discussion. Lulav sheyesh bo shlosha tfachim kedei lananea bo kasher. And the height of the lulav is three tfachim so that you can shake it. Stay tuned. We're going to learn in the Gemara that three tfachim really means four tfachim. How we're going to do that mathematically, we'll see later on in the Gemara how we take three and we turn three into four. Okay. Obviously, I'm running through the Mishnah. Obviously, I want to get to the Gemara and I want to get to today's daf. And I also happen to know that these points are going to be discussed at length in the Gemara, so we'll reserve the discussion until we get to the Gemara. Okay, we are going to be focusing today on the first line of the Mishnah, really the first four words of the Mishnah. The first four words of the Mishnah are lulav agazav ayavish pasal, that if I have either a stolen or a dry lulav, it's going to be disqualified, period. Now, remember what we discussed yesterday, but let's quickly reintroduce this topic to today's daf. There's a mitzvah to shake the lulav how many days? So if you read the pasuk in Chumash, so you can get confused. Because the Torah says, L'kach l'mechem b'yom ha-rishon, priyetz ha-dor kapos t'mar manaf etzav avar ve'nachal. So you take for yourself on the first day. Okay, so in other words, it sounds like, stop there, sounds like the mitzvah to take the lulav is on day one, and that's it. And then the pasuk goes on to say, u'smachtem l'fnei Hashem l'okechem shivas yamim. And then you should rejoice in front of Hashem for 7 days. And it's the same pasuk. We haven't changed psukim, so ostensibly that means with your lulav, hadas, arava, and esrog. So the beginning of the pasuk says take it for 1 day. The end of the pasuk says take it for 7 days. Well, which one's which? So the resolution is there are two mitzvos. One mitzvah is b'medina, meaning outside of the mikdash. Outside of the mikdash, there's a mitzvah min haTorah to take the lulav for 1 day. And then there's b'mikdash. Now I'm going to be careful about the words that I choose. B'mikdash, what exactly does that mean? That in of itself is its own discussion. But right now, for our purposes, let's just leave it at b'mikdash. If you're in the temple area, so then there's a mitzvah to take it all 7 days. So in other words, there are really two distinct mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah of lulav b'medina, lulav outside of the area of the mikdash, right? Lulav in Boca Raton. And then there's lulav b'mikdash. Lulav b'medina is only day one, and that's it. Meaning after day one, there's no mitzvah daraisa to take lulav and esrog. And lulav b'mikdash is all 7 days. Okay. Boca may not be a good example just because there's Yontif Sheni, and I don't want to bring Yontif Sheni into the discussion because it's only going to complicate and confuse. So let's not talk Boca. Let's talk about Haifa. Okay, right, Sukkos and Haifa. So Sukkos and Haifa, there's a mitzvah to take the lulav only 1 day, and then Yerushalayim, or I guess, Makom Mikdash, okay, is 7 days. Good. That's a critical point which we always need to keep in mind. Meaning that really is a backdrop to a lot of our discussion.
What can you say? Tells you when to start taking it the first day. And keep it for 7 days.
Okay, I mean,
you thought maybe take it only last day.
I mean, certainly, right? Yeah. But I'm what I understand that. But what I'm telling you is just. I mean, it's.
It doesn't have to be this, two separate things. It could be one.
Okay. No, but there's no.
First, and how long?
No, but 7 days. I understand that. But what I'm saying is correct. Meaning, right. I hear what you're saying, but
you know
what I'm saying is correct.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
I'm saying the explanation could have been.
Right. Understood. Now. One wonders then, if I'm right, let's say I am. So if I'm right, so you'll notice that Jews around the world are taking lulav all 7 days. So why? So we'll learn later on in this parak that Rav Yochanan Zakkai, after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, said, you know, we want to remember the Beis Hamikdash. So how are we going to remember the Beis Hamikdash? Unfortunately, we no longer have a Beis Hamikdash. So Jews around the world will take the lulav all 7 days. Zecher l'mikdash as a way of remembering the Beis Hamikdash. So the fact that we take the lulav after day one, that's a din derabanan. That's not a din d'araisa. That is a din derabanan, zecher l'mikdash, to help us remember the Beis Hamikdash. Day one is a mitzvah d'araisa. After day one, zecher l'mikdash. Yes.
How do you know from the pasuk you have to own the lulav for the other 6 days?
That's an excellent question. Please wait. No, you're right. Just wait 1 second, because you'll see your question is right on the money. Kapasak Vitani. We start with the Gemara, and the Gemara over here notes that the Mishnah does not make any distinction whatsoever. Meaning the Mishnah makes very blanket statements. The Mishnah says that you have a stolen lulav, it's no good. You have a dry lulav, it's no good. Period. And when the Mishnah does not segregate between day one versus day two. It doesn't matter if we're talking about day one, or if it does not matter if we're talking about day two. Now, don't get confused by the term Yom Tov Sheni. Yom Tov Sheni, when it's used in the Gemara, does not mean Yom Tov Sheni Shogalios. Yom Tov Sheni over here just means quite literally day two. That's it. Meaning we don't make a distinction between day one versus day two. Now, the Gemara's understanding of the Mishnah. Is the Gemara's understanding of the Mishnah that we're talking about in the Beis HaMikdash, or the Gemara's understanding of the Mishnah that we're talking about outside the Beis HaMikdash? Okay? I set it up. Now, there's a major disagreement amongst the Rishonim. What we're going to do today is we're going to learn like Rashi. We generally follow Rashi in terms of the understanding of the Gemara. Rashi says we're talking about outside the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? Right? There's a Ramban. We're going to follow Rashi. So Rashi says that when the Gemara over here is introducing the question, or not really, it's not even a question yet. It's just simply an observation of the Mishnah. The Mishnah does not make a distinction between day one and day two. Just like on day one, it can't be stolen and it can't be dry, so too on day two, outside of the Beis HaMikdash, where there's not a mitzvah d'oraisa to take lulav and esrog. It's only a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Nevertheless, it can't be dry and it can't be stolen.
Good. Stolen,
wait. Well, oh, not yet. Hold it. So now the Gemara says, "Loshlam yam tovsheni bishlam yavesh hadabi inan veleka." So I understand it cannot be dry because I need hadar. It needs to be beautiful veleka, and it's not. Meaning the lulav after day one is no longer beautiful. So it's still not beautiful. So I understand why yavish can be a disqualification both on day one and day two. And by the way, you understand when we say day two, we mean anything after day one. Day two just simply means in contradistinction to day one. So I understand why it should be no good on day one and on day two if it's dry, because dry is not hadar. Ela guzzle, but if it's stolen, so bishlam yam tovishin dechsev lachem mishalachem. I understand that on day one, if it's stolen, there's a fundamental issue with a stolen lulav, and that is, it's not yours. The Torah demands that it has to be yours. Memishalachem. Ela biyom tov sheni, am I low? But on the second day of Sukkos, why not stolen? Meaning, let's see if we can understand the Gemara here clearly, meaning that the lachem requirement is only for day one. The lachem requirement is not for day two. Danny alluded to this point just a moment ago. Let's hear the pasuk again. Ulakachtem lachem b'yom harishon. You take for yourself on day one. Meaning that, yes, there's an ownership requirement of the lulav. That ownership requirement is only for day one. Anything past day one is not a mitzvah d'oraisa. It's a din d'rabbanan. It's zeichel mikdash. There's no ownership requirement. The Gemara is not condoning that we go ahead and we steal a lulav. The Gemara is just simply noting, but why should it be disqualified? There is no ownership requirement after day one. And then Gemara is going to give an answer, and I feel like we all know what the Gemara is going to answer, and we're going to see the answer in just a moment. But before we get to the Gemara's answer, let's just for a moment think about what just happened in the Gemara. The Gemara said, look, Yavesh, I certainly get it. Day one, it can't be dry. Day two, it can't be dry. Gazel, I don't understand, says the Gemara. Day one, it can't be stolen because of Lachem. Day two, well there, it can be stolen because there's no Lachem requirement. Okay, now we all know where we're going with this. But before we go there, why did the Gemara, listen carefully, this is a critical point over here. Why did the Gemara so easily assume, well, it can't be dry in day one and it can't be dry in day two? Why did the Gemara, when it comes to Yavesh, the Gemara didn't bat an eyelash? The Gemara just went along with, well, of course, can't be dry on day one, it can't be dry on day two. But when it comes to Gazel, Gemara says, well, listen, there's no Lachem requirement for day two, so go ahead and steal it. Well, what's the difference between day one and day two? Again, let's just assume like Rashi, and assume like Tosfos. Well, day one is the Mitzvah D'Oraisa. Day two, it's the Echel HaMikdash. So a lot of the requirements can be dropped, specifically the requirement of lachem. So now let's deal with a basic issue. If the lachem requirement gets dropped from day one to day two, can't we argue that the yavish requirement also gets dropped from day one to day two? Okay. So now we get to defend Rashi. Meaning, and this is where Rashi comes out good. Because remember, why is it that a dry lulav is no good? So Rashi says, Zekeliv Anveil. Oh. So according to Rashi, it is not a halacha specific to lulav. It's a halacha that generally categorizes mitzvahs. When you have mitzvahs in general, so mitzvahs have to be beautiful. So in other words, right. So in other words, what regardless of what mitzvah I'm doing, when I'm doing it, mitzvah d'oraisa, mitzvah d'rabbanan, regardless of what the mitzvah is that I'm doing, there's a general hada requirement. So according to Rashi, good. The yavish requirement does not get dropped after day one, because truth of the matter is, what's driving the yavish requirement is not a specific halacha to lulav and esrog, it's a general halacha. So according to Rashi, we get it. We understand why. Yavish requirement doesn't drop off from day one, but the guzzle requirement, which it can't be stolen, why? Because it's a function of lachem. Well, lachem is only day one. After day one, there's no lachem requirement. Now, let's ask the question. According to Tosfos, Tosfos says, why is there a yavish requirement? Oh, because of the hekesh. Meaning, it's a halacha specific to lulav and esrog. So then one has to wonder, well, then why should it be that the yavish requirement then doesn't drop off after day one? Meaning, why am I taking the lulav and esrog after day one? Not because of a mitzvah d'oraisa, because of a zeichel mikdash. And there's no lachem requirement. So according to Tosfos, ostensibly, there should be no yavish requirement as well. Or no non-yavish requirement. Right? That's a basic question that we can ask on Tosfos. Now, we're not asking that question on Tosfos. Tosfos asks this question. Meaning Tosfos wonders, according to his understanding of the Gemara, that yavish is really a function of pre-Eitz Hadar. And after day one, I'm not taking the lulav and esrog because there's a mitzvah in the Torah. I'm taking because there's Eichel Mikdash. So why are we so prepared to waive the lachem requirement, but we're not prepared to waive the yavish requirement? So see the bottom Tosfos over here, where he struggles with it. It bothers him, and it's a basic question according to Tosfos. And what it also does is it helps us go back to Rashi, revisit Rashi, and say, hey, Rashi sounds right over here. That the yavish requirement is not specific to lulav; it's a more generalized requirement.
Why don't we just say it's not a lulav? It's twice on a lulav.
Okay, you're right. In other words, it touches on the fundamental definition of what it is.
Right.
Okay, you can certainly say that, but okay, but
so the lulav in gematria is chayim.
That's nice. Who says that?
I saw it here. In the
okay,
commentary.
Fine. Okay. Right. Well, that goes back to the Rabbi. Law meisim yaluka. Okay. Very good. All right. So So let's get to the Gemara. And now, by the way, in other words, if time permits, which it doesn't, but go through the Tosfos. Go through the Bam Tosfos over here, where he discusses why it should be. And he does. By the way, he doesn't give your answer. Why should be that the yavish requirement does not drop off after day one? Okay. Back to the Gemara. Answers the Gemara. Am Rav Yochem Mishum Rav Shimon Bar Yochem in the top of Lamed Amar Alf. Mishum Davle Mitzvah Haba Ba'Aveira. The reason why I can't steal a lulav after day one is because of the concept of Mitzvah Haba Ba'Aveira. Shenamar. Now, how do I Mitzvah Haba Ba'Aveira? I'm sorry, I just kind of assumed we all know what that meant. I'm sure we do, but for the purpose of explanation, Mitzvah Haba Ba'Aveira means that I'm doing a mitzvah, but I'm doing it through an Aveira. Meaning, what am I doing? I'm stealing a lulav. And then I'm trying to then accomplish a mitzvah after having stolen the lulav. So it's mitzvah haba ba'aveira, and that negates the mitzvah. Now, how do I know that this is so shenemar? The Gemara is going to quote a pasuk. Okay, let's be mindful that when the Gemara quotes a pasuk, the Gemara is quoting a pasuk in Malachi, meaning the Gemara is not quoting a pasuk in the Torah. So what one could certainly argue, and we discussed this earlier on Daf Tes, one could certainly argue is that intuitively, we certainly understand the concept of mitzvah baba avera, meaning it speaks to the idea of the ends do not justify the means. Meaning, I'm going to fulfill a mitzvah, yeah, but that doesn't allow you to steal. So intuitively, we understand the concept, but it very well may be, and now when I say it may be, Tosfos actually says this back on Daf Tes, that this is not a din d'oraisa. This is not a biblical concept. It's a din d'rabbanan. The Gemara is quoting a pasuk from Malachi. The Navi says, "Ve'evesim gazol v'esvipisech v'esachola." So you're going to bring a carbon which is stolen, which is pisech. Pisech over here means lame. V'esachola, or a sick animal. So the Navi is giving tochacha, he's giving rebuke, meaning this is what you're bringing, this is a kind of animal that you're bringing. And you'll notice that he lumps together stolen animals with lame animals. Gazul dumi dipiseach. Ma piseach leisle takanta, av gazul leisle takanta. Now a lame animal cannot be brought as a carbon. It's a mum, it's a physical blemish in the animal. And as Rashi points out, it's a mum kavua. It's a permanent physical blemish. So that means that that animal is disqualified. Much like the piseach is disqualified, Gazel, the stolen animal, also is going to be disqualified. And then the Gemara further articulates. Lo shna lifnei yesh v'lo shalacha yesh. It doesn't matter whether it's before yesh or if it's after yesh. Bishlam lifnei yesh. Now, by the way, again, I got to stop assuming. Yesh means that the owner has given up hope. He has despaired. He said, I'm never going to get it back. Availi lechisaron kis. It doesn't matter whether it's before or after yesh. Now, bishlam lifnei yesh. Now, before yesh occurs, meaning I take an animal away from my neighbor. Okay? I steal from him. Now, if before Yeish, can I offer this as my carbon? The answer is, without mitzvah haba ba'avera, the answer, of course, is no. You can't. Why? Adam ki akriv mekem. Because, okay, fits in beautifully in terms of the parsha. Okay? We're going to see one of the first psukim in this week's parsha. Adam ki akriv mekem. Amar rachmana v'lavdi dehu. Because the Torah says, when you bring a carbon, the animal has to have belonged to you. You had to have been the owner of the animal. If you take somebody else's animal, you can't be makdish somebody else's animal. You cannot sanctify somebody else's animal as your carbon. So therefore, if before Yeush, I take something that doesn't belong to me, meaning just fundamentally, I cannot offer it as a carbon because it wasn't mine to begin with. But if, let's say, I take the animal and then he gives up hope and he says, and we hear him say, I forget it, I'm never going to get it back. So after Yesh now, I've made an acquisition on it. Now, as Rashi points out, we touch on a basic issue, a Baba Kama issue, which is, how do I acquire stolen items? Do I need Yeush or do I need Yeush plus? So that's a basic machlokas amongst the Amoraim in the Gemara Baba Kama. Right now the Gemara is assuming Yeush by itself is a kinyan, it creates an acquisition. The mere fact that the owner of the item has given up hope on the item means that I acquired the item. It does not mean that what I did is good, what I did is stealing. But in terms of acquisition, I acquire the animal. Obviously, if I want to do tshuva, I have to make restitution for the object in which I stole. But in terms of ownership of the item is considered mine. So why not? Meaning, not why not steal. But after having stolen, and after the owner has given up hope, and now I am the rightful owner of such an animal, why not offer it as a carbon? Allah mishum davale mitzvah ba ba'avera, because of the concept of mitzvah ba ba'avera. Meaning the Navi Malachi tells us that you know what the guzzle is like? It's like the piseach. The piseach can never be brought as a carbon, neither can the guzzle. It never can be brought by as a carbon, even if the yesh occurred, even if you become the rightful owner, but mitzvah haba ba'avera. It is a mitzvah that's generated by an avera, and therefore you cannot bring it as a carbon.
Why doesn't this principle apply to the first day if you bring it on the first day?
Okay, excellent question. Tosfos asked your question. Give me a moment. I'll come back. I won't address your question, but I'll show you where to find it in Tosfos. The Gemara quotes another pasuk that describes this idea. I love justice, and sone geza ba'ola, and I hate theft when it comes to an ola. Meaning it's stealing a carbon ola, hate it. So mashal mechpas v'dam shayo v'ra beis ameches. Now, in terms of understanding this, the Gemara gives us a mashal. The Gemara gives us a parable. Amar la'avadav tenu meches amochsim. So the king goes over the bridge, and right over the bridge, so you have the toll collector. So the king says, okay. He says to his driver, I know I'm giving a somewhat modern, but he says to the driver, okay, pay the toll. Pay the toll. Well, what do you mean? That money's going to go right back to you. It's okay, pay it. So Amar lav alokol ameches kulo shelcha. And the counter argument is, why are you paying the toll? The money's going to come back to you anyway. Amar lahem imeni yom adu kol avdei derachim v'lo yavrichotz mamin ameches. So that I serve as a model citizen, meaning I'm going to pay the taxes, and so everyone else is going to see, oh, he pays the taxes, okay, I got to pay the tax as well. And I shouldn't shirk my responsibility of paying the tax. So basically, the king, even though the money's going to go right back to his pocket, but nevertheless, he's going to serve as a model. So, Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the mashal. What's the nimshal? Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Amar Ani Hashem, Stonei Geza Ba'Ola. So, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, oh, I hate theft vis-a-vis Ola. Now, Ola, what's a carbon Ola? It's an animal that start off by belonging to Hashem. I mean, Kula Hashem. Everything belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what happens, it comes right back to Hashem, meaning the carbon Ola, Kulo Nisraf, it's all burnt on the Mizbeach. So it's, that it goes right back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what difference does it make? I took it from him, he took it from me. What difference does it make? It started at Hashem, it goes to Hashem. So mimeni yomadu b'neiva yafirchu atzma min hagazel. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I don't want stolen goods. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is modeling the behavior of he doesn't want a carbonola, even though it starts by him and ends by him, so too by us, for sure, we shouldn't steal as well. Edimanami, Amarabi Ami. The Gemara now quotes in the name of Rabbi Ami. Same point. Yavesh Pasol, Mimnesha in Hadar. So a dry lulav is no good because it's not Hadar. Gazel Pasol. Now, why is a stolen lulav disqualified? Mishum Dabale Mitzvah Baba Avera. Because of the concept of Mitzvah Baba Avera. Period. Okay. Adkan. So now, just to quickly wrap up, our first point for today, it's a major point, and that is that the Mishnah says that when I have a stolen lulav, it's no good. Kapasik v'tanya, the Mishnah does not make a distinction between day one versus day two. Day one, I cannot use a stolen lulav because of the requirement of lachem. Day two, I cannot use a stolen lulav. Now, there's no lachem requirement because lachem is only limited to day one. So why can't I use a stolen lulav after day one? Answer, mitzvah haba ba'aver, because of this concept of mitzvah haba ba'aver. Okay, let's just touch on Ben's question. It's a basic question. It's an important question. Once we have this concept of mitzvah haba ba'avera, so then why do I have this lachem requirement? Meaning, what does lachem add? What layer does it add to this whole discussion? Because quite frankly, much like mitzvah haba ba'avera is going to disqualify the lulav on day two, isn't mitzvah haba ba'avera going to disqualify it on day one? Take a look at the top Tosfos on Lamed Amud Aleph. Mishum davle mitzvah ba'aver v'had etan l'kam emperek lulav arav lachem mishalachem otis v'shol v'tzagazol mishum shol itzrechei debalav lachem nafkalan gazol mishum mitzvah ba'aver. So Tosos first of all gives a very basic answer. Do you know what lachem adds? A borrowed lulav. Right, because if it's just mitzvah ba'aver, so that only means I can't steal a lulav. But once we have a lachem requirement on day one, not only can I not steal a lulav, I can't even say, hey, would you mind lending me your lulav? And the person says, sure, fine, no problem at all. That's what we gain from lachem, which we don't have in mitzvah ba'ba avera. Okay, it's pointed out, a number of people point out, the achronim point out, that you go back to daf tes, and the truth of the matter is that we can give another answer to this question. What do we gain by the lachem, right? A basic answer in terms of what we gain by the lachem. Lachem is a psul de oraisa. Mitzvah ba'haba ba'avera is only a psul de rabbanan. Now psul is psul. Psul means it's disqualified. So, but still, just from a fundamental standpoint, just from a basic conceptual standpoint, lachem tells me that it has to be yours min haTorah. Mitzvah haba ba'aver tells me that it's disqualified, but albeit only on a derabbanan level. Right? Because Tosfos back on Daf Tes says that mitzvah haba ba'aver is not a din d'oraisa, but merely just but a din derabbanan. Okay. Good. All right. So we are stage is set. We are we just explained why it is that even on day two I can't steal a lulav. Reason being, because of mitzvah haba ba'avera. There's no lachem requirement, but still, a lulav on day two and onward cannot be stolen because of the concept. Upligi de Rav Yitzchak. Interestingly enough, Rav Yitzchak argues. Rav Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni says that if you steal a lulav from day two and onward, you'll fulfill your obligation of the lulav of the dalaminim. Now, needless to say, he's not condoning. Okay, hopefully that's a point that's too obvious. He's not condoning. He's just simply saying that if you steal a lulav, esa hadasim aravos and esrog, after from day two and onward, You have fulfilled your mitzvah. Now, what about mitzvah baba avera? So that's exactly Gemara's point. Pligi, he argues. Now, what exactly does that mean, he argues? So Tosos says, you want to take a look at the bottom Tosos over here.
He's saying he didn't steal it. Maybe somebody else stole it.
No.
Somebody else stole it.
You could say that, but...
If he said a stolen one... Yeah, you didn't say he stole it.
I understand that, but like,
I agreed.
But I would imagine to say that even if he stole it, now if you take a look at the bomb tosses over here, so what does he do? He just dismisses the whole concept of mitzvah abab avera. So the very bomb tosses says no, he doesn't dismiss the concept. Conceptually, he holds of mitzvah abab avera, but he applies it only to dini daraisa, not to dini darabanan. Meaning the lulav after day one is only a din darabanan, not a din daraisa. And so therefore, the concept of mitzvah abab avera only applies to dini daraisa, not to dini derabanan. That's Rav Yitzchak. Obviously, then, that means that all the previous Tanaim and Amoraim, who say that you cannot use a stolen lulav from day two and onward, take the concept of mitzvah abab avera and apply it even to dini derabanan as well. The mitzvah to take lulav and the dalaminim from day two and onward is only a din derabanan. Again, assuming... like we said from the beginning of this morning, assuming that we're talking about outside the Mikdash area, assuming that, and this is Rashi and Tosfos' assumption throughout the entire sugya, assuming that we're talking about outside the base of Mikdash area, it is merely a din derabanan, and yet we're applying the concept of mitzvah of baba avera even outside of the base of Mikdash area. Meisav Rav Nachman Yitzchak. Rav Nachman Yitzchak challenges based on the following brisa: lulav agazav al yavish pasul. So if I have either a stolen or a Or a dry lulav, it's possible. It's not a brisa, by the way. Let me just clarify or correct myself. It's our Mishnah. Ha-sha'ul kasher. Now, from the Mishnah says that a dry lulav and a stolen lulav is no good. Now, you could read into the Mishnah, and you could say, well, if it's stolen, it's no good, but if it's borrowed, it is good. A borrowed lulav is good. Well, if we're talking about day one, well, the Torah says lachem, it has to be yours. And a borrowed lulav, although you did nothing wrong, but it's not yours. Mishalachem v'haylav didehu. Alav b'yom tov sheni. It must be that our Mishnah is talking about yom tov sheni v'ketani gaz apostle. And yet, our Mishnah says that if it's stolen, it's no good. And so what do you see? Again, you see that even though we're talking, we have to be talking about day two, because our Mishnah is saying that the borrowed lulav is good. The borrowed lulav is not good on day one, it's only good on day two. So our Mishnah has to be talking about day two, and meanwhile, the Mishnah says that if it's stolen, it's no good. So this is difficult for Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava la'olam b'yom tov rishon. No, our Mishnah is really talking about yom tov rishon. V'lomi bai kamar. And the style of the Mishnah is lomi by it, which is, it goes without saying, lo mi by shal delav didehu, it goes without saying that if I borrow lulav, that's it's no good because it's not yours. Aval gazol, aim astam gzela yeush balimu. But if I steal the lulav, and not just gineva, not where I just simply sneak into somebody's house and in the middle of the night I steal it, but gzela, I just take it right from him. And you could make the argument that if I take it right from him and he sees who I am, so Yeush, yeah, right. Obviously, it means I'm much stronger than him, and he's gonna right. I'm the bully who takes the lunch money, and he's miyash immediately, and therefore you can make the argument. It's funny when you see here what the Gemara is doing. The Gemara is arguing. Shaul goes without saying it doesn't work, but Gazel, I might have thought Gzela would work because Yeush Balim, because he's given up hope, which makes it effectively mine. And therefore it becomes mine, kamash malan. And the Mishnah is teaching us, therefore, that no, even if I steal it, and even though you can make an argument that a stolen lulav would work, that's the point of the Mishnah, it doesn't work. Period, adkan. Okay. You know, it's strange, by the way. The Gemara, you know what the Gemara just did? The Gemara just said, well, you know, the Mishnah can't be talking about day one, so their Mishnah is talking about day two. And then the Gemara says, no, the Mishnah really can be talking about day one. It's funny, because when you go back to the beginning of the whole discussion, the Gemara's immediate reaction to the Mishnah was, kapasak vitani. Meaning, of course, the Mishnah's talking, the Mishnah is not making any differentiation between day one and day two. And the Gemara, the last 5 to 10 lines, the Gemara just suggested that, no, maybe the Mishnah is making a distinction between day one versus day two. Right, anyway, let's say, It's an observation. It's a hara. Fine. We're going to go on. Amalahu Rav Huna Lahanu Avankri. Okay. Now, with all this in mind, now we're going to go over the next lines of the Gemara. We've truly finished up the Daf. Right, the Amud Beis, as you see, is a short Amud in terms of Gemara, long in terms of Tosfos, but it's going to be challenging, these next lines of Gemara, because basically now, we have to keep the following in mind. We can't use stolen goods for the mitzvah of Lulav. Now, why not? Now, again, aside from the fact that the act of stealing in itself, bad. Torah prohibits it. Aside from that, but then even the result that's yielded from the stolen item cannot be used for the purpose of a mitzvah. Why not? So on day one, because there's a lechem requirement. On day two and onward, there's another consideration of mitzvah abba b'avera, because the ends do not justify the means. I can't fulfill the mitzvah through the avera, through the act of stealing. Okay, so there, right? So just to make sure that we understand, there really are two discussions. Number one, stealing you can't do. Okay, that's its own discussion. But even after the act of stealing, still the mitzvah does not get accomplished because of this concept of mitzvah abba b'avera. It disqualifies the mitzvah. So now basically Rav Huna is going to speak to the avantkari. Avantkari basically are your merchants. Your merchants, let's assume they're Jewish. Okay, and let's not just assume that. The Gemara later on will say. So they themselves obviously have a mitzvah for themselves, but okay. But avankri just simply means the merchants who are going to go out and they're going to buy the hadassim from the landowners, and then in turn they're going to go ahead and pass it on and sell it to the Jews so they can fulfill the mitzvah of lulav hadassim, the dalaminim. Okay. Rav Huna basically is going to advise the avankri, these merchants, how to make a proper acquisition of the hadassim. So he says like this. When you purchase a hadassim, ha'asa, that's the Aramaic word for hadassim. When you purchase a hadassim from the non-Jews, lo sigzizu ason. So here's what you should not do. In other words, you're going to obviously pay the money, but you yourself shouldn't go out to the field and cut the hadassim from the ground. But Ella, ligzaza inu, let them cut it off the ground, v'yavoluchu, and then in turn let them give it to you, and then obviously you're going to buy it, you're going to pay for it, and then you can go around, you can go ahead, turn around now and sell it to Jews. Okay, now basically, Rav Huna is basically saying, look, obviously this is a legality. He's concerned about a particular legality, which is basically why he's advising the merchants, look, ultimately, the exchange, the transaction is going to be very simple. You're buying the hadassim from the non-Jews who are owners of the field, and then you're in turn going to sell it to other Jews. Okay, good. That's ultimately what's going to happen. But to make the transaction more legal, to make it more kosher, so what I'm advising, Rav Huna is telling the avankri, what I'm advising you should do is, don't cut the hadassim yourselves. Let them cut the hadassim. Then in turn, sell it to you. And then you would then in turn sell it to the Jew. Okay. And the obvious question is, why? Why? What does that help? What does that do in terms of making this transaction more kosher? Okay. So the Gemara says, that's the Gemara's question. So my timer. We're in the very bottom line of Lamed Amidaf. Stam ovde kochavim gazlani arasaninu. So the Gemara says that, generally speaking, so the ovde kochavim were stealing lands. Now, tell you the truth, huh? Right. Tell you the truth. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi does make a comment. Veshema oso karka miyisrael hava, and maybe this land belonged to a Jew, which from Rashi sounds like, well, if it didn't belong to a Jew, so then it would be okay, but we know the Gemara Baba Kama says that it's not okay. Theft from a Jew, theft from a non-Jew are both not okay. So Rashi's comment over here that maybe the land belonged to a Jew, it is a difficult line in Rashi, it's a challenging line in Rashi, it requires its own discussion. Okay, good. I don't want that point to escape us. But anyway, but let's deal with the basic issue. When you're buying the hadassim from the Akum, so the possibility is that the Akum is not the owner of the land, but rather they stole the land. V'karka eina nigzelis. And we have a basic rule. Again, a lot of Baba Kama concepts come up in today's daf. And we have a basic rule, and that is land cannot be stolen. What does that mean, land can't be stolen? Look at the top Rashi on the Amud Beis. Klomar. Eina kenuya lagazlan. Meaning land can't be stolen, meaning there's never going to be a kinyan when it comes to land. Unlike movable items, that when I steal the item, there's a possibility of acquisition. Again, yeah, we understand. We're not condoning the act. The act is prohibited. We're now just speaking within the world of legality of making an acquisition on stolen goods. Eventually, stolen goods can be acquired. The perpetrator of the act of theft always needs to reimburse. He wants to do tshuva. He has to return. The best form of tshuva is to return the item that he stole. If that's not possible, he has to make restitution on the value of the item. Okay, good. But in other words, but we're talking about whether or not there can be an acquisition on the item, on the stolen item. So when it comes to movables, sure. When it comes to land, no.
What if you're on the land for 3 years and there was no protest? That was one of the things you're going to
buy. Yeah, but right. Okay, fine. You're right, but just dealing with the basic concept. That stolen land cannot be acquired. Klamar Rashi, I'm just doing the top Rashi. Klamar ain't a kenuya lagazlan bishum yesh the olam becheskas balahi, and it's always under the assumed ownership of its original owner. Demikrai nafkalan ba'gozah basra. Rashi quotes the final perek of Baba Kama where the Gemara discusses this. Binizakin aval mishenit la shapri have a gezel. So now that means as follows. When the hadassim were connected to the ground, and let's say, we don't know this of course, but let's say that the akum who are squatting on the land don't actually own the land. And that means then that the hadassim which are still connected to the ground are not theirs. So when you come and you cut the hadassim, the avankari, so now you are doing what? You're stealing. And Rashi goes on to write, ava mishenit la shapri ave gezel. Vehatosho, who goes low? Now, who's the thief? The cutter. The one who is doing the actual cutting of the hadassim off the ground. Hilkach ligzizei hein minamechubar. So now, let them cut it. Vienu alachem. Let them now in turn give it to you. Shiuhena gazlanim. They're going to be the gazlan. Vatem lochim oso mehem. And you're going to get it from them. Wait, I can predict what you're going to ask. Let me first finish the Rashi, and then I'll let you ask it. V'habalim nisyashu kvar, and Rashi says, now remember, we're talking here in the world of acquisition. So how do you acquire? The only way that you can make a proper acquisition is if the original owner is miyayish. Now, there's no yeyush on the land itself, but it's detached. It's no longer connected to the land. The non-Jew was the one who cut it. So they're the gazlan. Now they, in turn, you buy it from them. They're the thief. You're the purchaser. So v'habalim nisyashu kvar mikol haperos v'have yeush etzlam v'akakachu mishtane mirushusan lirushuschem. It now goes from their domain, their property, to your property. V'kasar v'yeush grei delokane. Now Rashi points out, why do I need this extra step of switching shinui rishus, of going from their hands, meaning the non-Jew, to yours. So So Rashi says that one way we can explain it is that right now Rav Huna is assuming that Yerush by itself does not create an acquisition. I need Yerush plus. In this case, I need Yerush plus Shinu Rishus. The Inami, or Rashi alternatively, says Kani mitzvah abba be'avera. I'm sorry, v'inami kani, or Rashi says, maybe Yerush by itself does work, mitzvah be'avera have imatem chatachtu amin mechubar. It'll be mitzvah be'avera if you cut it, tiyu atem gozlim, because then you're going to be the thief, and then you in turn cannot use it because of mitzvah be'avera. If you let them cut it, and then in turn sell it to you, so then the psul, the disqualification of mitzvah be'avera, gets lost. Okay, so, again, this is the tricky part of today's daf. Rav Huna says to the Avankari, you're going to go buy the hadassim from the non-Jews over there on quote unquote their property. Don't cut it. Let them cut it. Let them sell it to you, and that'll make it good. That'll make it better. Why? So the Gemara explains, because we don't know, but we'll assume, or we're going to assume is not the right word. We're going to suspect that maybe they stole the land from somebody else. So now this hadassim really is stolen property. So therefore, in order to absolve that issue, I mean, I guess fundamentally they shouldn't have stole it to begin with, and they should give it back to the rightful owner. But obviously, we're past that point. So just simply to absolve the issue, to get around the issue of using stolen property as hadassim, let them cut it. They will be the thief. They sell it to you, and now you in turn can go ahead and you can use it. Okay, Ben.
When you ask the guy, isn't he acting as a shliach and is indirect to the
right? Basically, right. How is it? All right. The basic question over here is, how is it that a transaction removes the problem of mitzvah haba b'avera? Right. That's
yes, yeosh, because the bottom of yeosh on the.
When all understood, but when all is said and done, it's stolen. Understood, and he made a kinyan on it.
Right.
Okay, but
so that's his.
Okay. All right. In other words,
that's what
so, right. Somehow, I understand that. It does require more thought and more consideration. Somehow, the transaction, meaning once it goes from the thief's possession to the buyer's possession, so not only is there a kinyan, a bona fide kinyan, but Rashi says in the second pshat, it removes the psul of mitzvah haba b'avera, meaning somehow it's no longer viewed, you're not stealing it. You could have argued, in other words, without the Rashi, you could have argued it's a stolen item. And you know it's a stolen item. Or at least you're suspecting that it's a stolen item. Okay. Somehow, either the Yeush...
But through Shinui, it became the nobri's item.
Yeah, right, okay. It removes the psul of mitzvah b'aveiro. So good. So the Gemara says, Ki hechid elahavi Yeush balam. I'm sorry, so let's read all this inside in the Gemara. Well, in other words, he's not a shliach. You're buying it from him.
No, but you're asking him to do something...
No, you're asking him... You're asking him, look, you're going to sell it to me anyway.
Right.
And you're not my shliach. You're going to sell it to me.
You're asking him to cut it for you.
No. Good. But you're not... No, but... No. In other words, he's the owner right now. The presumed owner, right? We put the owners in quotes. He's the owner right now. You're just simply saying to him, look, I want to buy it from you. But... Let's just make it clear. I'm not going to buy it and then go out to the field and do the cutting myself. I just want you to cut it. Not as my shliach. Just simply, this is how I would like to buy the object from you. I would like to buy it already cut. That's all. You're not acting as a shliach. Just simply acting as a buyer and just making a stipulation in the purchase. I just want to cut already. That's fine. So the Gemara says, "Hilkach ligza inu ki hechad lo haviyesh ba'alim biyadayhu didhu v'shinu reishus biyadayhu." And now you'll have him being the gazlan. Now the transaction makes it a shinu reishus. So now I have yesh, I have shinu reishus, and good. Now you're the rightful owner, and we remove the mitzvah haba b'avera. So sof ki gazu avankri laviyesh ba'alim biyadayhu v'shinu reishus biyadan. So the Gemara says, okay. But truth be told is that even if the Avankri is the one who cuts it, the Gemara says, okay, so let's call them the Gazlan. But they in turn are going to sell it to somebody else. They're the Gazlan. The people who buy from the Avankri, shouldn't they be in the clear? So the Gemara says, let's rechabo shana da Avankri gufayu. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. That's a good point. The Avankri themselves, however, also want to fulfill the mitzvah of Hadas. And together with the Dalaminim. So for the Avankri themselves, meaning Rav Huna's advice to the Avankri was not for the people they in turn sell it to, because the people they in turn sell it to, they're fine. Because again, Yeush, and there was Shina Rishus, so the people they sell it to are fine. What Rav Huna was advising to the Avankri is, for you to fulfill the mitzvah of Hadas, you want to make sure that you're not the one who cuts it from the ground. So
there was a Yeush.
So again, so Rashi says, either one, Rav Huna holds that yesh by itself is not kona, or two, we want to get rid of the mitzvah haba b'avera. One of those two possibilities. V'liknu b'shinui maisa, So I'll just finish up. Okay, what about Shino and Maisa? Meaning you're cutting it, and furthermore, you're bundling it together. So Kasav Lulav Ein Tzarech Eged. So the Gemara says either one, we could take the position that Lulav does not require an Eged, which, by the way, that's a Chachamim's position. So that's one. So that means then that it isn't going through a physical change. And Imtim Salam or Lulav Tzarech Eged, Ashino Chozal Briyasu, Vashino Chozal Briyasu, Lashmei Shinoi. Or the Gemara says also, what you could very easily argue is, tying it up is not a Shinoi. That's not a physical change. You tie it, you untie it. So that's not really a Shinoi. The Gemara says, let's just wrap it up. Shinoi Veliknui B'Shinoi Hashem. Or the Gemara says, okay, what about a change of name? Demikara Havalei Asav Hashta Hoshana. So the Gemara says, yeah, it was Hadas, and then when you put it together with your Dalaminim, now it's Hoshana. So the Gemara says, so me kara nami la'asa Hoshana karile. The Gemara says it didn't really go through a Shinoi Hashem as well. Okay, that's a big daf today. I know, not a lot of words, but a big daf today. We did the Mishnah. Lulav HaGazel is possible, that the stolen lulav is going to be possible. And why should that be? On day one, because it lacks the requirement of Lachem. On day two, because of Mitzvah Haba Be'Avera. We discussed Mitzvah Haba Be'Avera in context of whether it's the Din D'Oraisa, whether it's the Din D'Rabbanan, whether it applies to Mitzvah D'Oraisa, whether it also applies to Dini D'Rabbanan as well. The halacha of the Gemara is, the conclusion of the Gemara is, although there is one Amara who says that it doesn't apply to a Din D'Rabbanan, but the Gemara's conclusion is, Mitzvah Haba Be'Avera does apply to Dini D'Rabbanan. It applies to Lulav on day two and onward. And then the Gemara's discussion of what Rav Huna suggested to the Avankari. Rav Huna said to the Avankari, what I want you to do is let them, the owners of the land, cut it, and then you go ahead and you take it. Now, for the people they sell it to, truth of the matter is, as a Gemara, they could have cut it themselves because you had Yesh and Yashin Rishus, but for them themselves, the Avankari themselves, if they want to fulfill the mitzvah of Hadassim and not have the stigma of Mitzvah Haba Be'Avera, so have them cut it, they'll be the Gazlan, they'll in turn sell it to you, that'll be now. They'll be the Gazlan, they'll be Shina Rishus, and that expunges the problem of Mitzvah Haba Be'Avera.